Hey, Will. So, how's it going?
Hey, Bruce. Long time. Actually, I guess not so long time, right? It's only been a couple days or so, but yeah, things are going well. How about you?
Yeah, real good. Great to be talking with you again. And as we said in our introduction to this podcast series, what we want to do each week is find a topic that has either been in the news, preferably, can I say, not politically, but I know at times that's going to...
I've been getting hate mail, so we got to stay away from politics. I know it's not so bad down in Australia. Actually, it's just wonderful here in the United States, too. Everybody's happy.
Oh, that's good.
Everybody's happy. It's a good thing.
I'm pleased that everything's worked out now. That'll make a good start.
We're not going to go there. Yeah, we're not going there.
So each week we're going to take one of the topics and try and dig a bit deeper, explore some of the ideas, and hopefully share our thoughts on what that might mean. And we previewed the first one was going to be around personalization. Personalization because it's such a hot topic and it's so misinterpreted and misunderstood. Personalization because it frankly means everything to everybody and means nothing to nobody. and I can also say, given you nicely reference my decades of experience, lifetimes of experience in the field, it's an idea that's been with us for 40 or 50 years, yeah, and it's still largely misinterpreted. Do you want to sort of set up the article?
Well, sure. So, you know what I'm thinking? Maybe, I'll give the article address. We made it a bit.ly link. So it's just bit.ly/MLPOD11. So Modern Learners Podcast, MLPOD11. If you want to pause the podcast and go and read it or take a look at it, and, you know, you can kind of follow along in the conversation when you come back.
Cool.
But, you know, you know that this is one of my, like, huge issues right now. Is that it's not just personalization, it's all of this stuff that for some reason we are very lazy with our language. And I think that this particular article in Wired, the reason that it made me kind of really nuts is because if you read it, there are so many kind of inherent assumptions that we make about all of this stuff that I don't think we can assume any longer. And, you know, so that's why I thought this one might be interesting, just to get to the depths of how we take for granted certain terms and words without being willing, or maybe we're just kind of lazy about it or whatever, but without thinking about how we deconstruct that stuff and really, really define it. So that's why I thought this article might be pretty interesting. But basically, this is personalization a la the Summit Public Schools, which is a network of schools out in California that has made personalization. It's like really big deal. And they have the Summit Basecamp. They have the personalized learning platform software, which is free for schools to use. And again, I don't want to suggest in any way that we're disparaging the work of those people who are out there trying to improve education for kids. That's not what this is about. But in the spirit of raising the bar, I think there's some things that are in here that we probably, again, need to talk about. So I'll just start with this one, which basically, to me at least, was the in the second paragraph, the thing that started getting me, or third paragraph, the thing that started getting me upset. But anyway, the writer says, indeed, despite the buzz around personalized learning, there's no simple recipe for success, and the common ingredients such as adaptive learning, technology, and student control over learning can backfire if poorly implemented. Now, when I read that, I just want to ask a whole bunch of stuff. Okay, so what do you mean by personalized learning? What is that? Because, again, there's 100 definitions depending on 100 different people that you talk to. When she says there's no simple recipe for success, well, what is success? How are you defining success?
Yep.
What is it that you're searching for, right? And then it says student control over learning. Well, what does that mean? I mean, agency, you know, I wrote a blog post a couple of days ago on my own blog where it was talking about agency. And to me, that's the most important issue in when we're talking about change in schools, is how much agency are we giving to kids to learn on their own? And so what do you mean by that? And then, you know, can backfire if poorly implemented. Well, what does that mean? I mean, and I know that, you know, those are things that hopefully the story is going to suss out, but it doesn't. And that's the problem. So as you go through this, they just start talking about personalized learning, and they just, you know, just throw out success and achievement and all this other stuff, and it just kind of drives me crazy. So let me ask you, Bruce, what does personalized learning mean to you, and how do you think that it's different from what the definition should be or the verbiage should be, if that's a understandable question?
I like the way you do it. You talk about personal learning rather than personalized learning to try and distinguish between the almost abusive way people use the term personalized and the clichéd way that we describe it is always the path and pace versus voice and choice, which sort of helps, I think, people get a picture of where we're going with this. So let me just say, and I have to, when I read that article, for most of the article, I could picture an experiences that I saw in I am going to roll the clock back, late 1980s, mate.
You know, at least it was in the 20th century. I mean, that's good. So
That's right. There's a 20th, not the 19th century. And I remember those classroom networks, and I remember stuff. There was a product out at that time, and I'm sure I can mention it, called Success Maker. And it was taking the world by storm. So 30 or 40 years ago, I know that in this country, and I know it was all over America and Canada, this company was rolling out this software that was going to allow kids to have personalized learning environments. Now, let's just agree that sometimes they talk about individualized learning, but really today we're talking about personalized learning. And what it did essentially was it had a set curriculum that, you know, there was an endpoint to, and with the use of the magic new computer idea that we had in the 80s, kids were able to make their own choices about how they were going to learn. So it pre-tested their knowledge, and on the base of that pre-test, it took them down a certain path, and at the end of the day, they supposedly were able to understand certain ideas, and particularly in the teaching of subjects like mathematics and the drill and test of subjects like science, if that's not an oxymoron in itself. And so what you had there was a simple misuse of a powerful technology to achieve an end that was, you know, somehow satisfied the needs of schools. Now, very quickly, schools came to realize that this really wasn't personalizing anything, that all it was doing was allowing, you know, complex technology to make some simple decisions on behalf of kids and put them in the same place that they may or may not have been anyway. Now, I get quite cranky now that I see this stuff being thrown up, because it's an adaptation of the same stuff. Essentially what they're saying is we want all these kids to get to this end point, and we're going to allow computer to make choices about how they get there. So it's path and pace. Oh, and by the way, they don't have to rush. If they take a little bit longer, they can, you know, go down a path. Now, on the simplest level, you know, it makes a lot of sense, and that's why it's got such wide appeal. That's why it appeals to parents. Parents, what you're saying to parents is, oh, look, you know, your son or daughter, you know, is having a little bit of trouble with this mathematical concept, and I'll pick on my favorite one, equivalence. So, you know, we're going to, you know, the computer makes some choices about giving them slightly easier path to get to the end point where they understand, you know, a complex idea. And it's a sort of it has such an appeal as an idea, as opposed to saying, well, do we really want all these kids to all learn the same ideas, the same information,
right,
with respect to drill and test and multiple choice, the same facts, the same knowledge? Is that really appropriate in 2017? Is that a modern learning environment just because it's got a modern thing that it's working with called a computer? And the answer, of course, is no.
And that's the question. But see, that's the question that people don't get to. And again, in this article, I'm just looking at it, you know, there's this one line. It says, by offloading some rote learning to a computer, such as memorizing the steps of cell division or the formulas for sine, cosine, and tangent, we can make the most of the connections between teachers and kids, you know, which is great. And, you know, we want more of those interactions to be about big ideas, deeper learning, and the sort of feedback that that you can only get from a real live adult. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's a great aspiration. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But it's the idea that every kid should memorize the steps of a cell division or the formulas of sine, cosine, and tangent. I mean, I don't know about you, you know, I'm speaking for probably 80% of people who are listening to this. I never used any of that stuff ever in my life. And so this is that type of curriculum outcome, that type of, you know, knowledge outcome is an outcome that's based on scarcity, number one, that's based on an idea of school that I think is kind of breaking apart. But it's not personal learning to say to kids, you can take whatever path you want to learn what a cosine is. Because the child is not choosing to learn cosine. That's our choice. And so what I find interesting is that so many people are refuse to ask that bigger question about curriculum and learning in general. Because if they do ask that question, then the whole thing kind of breaks down, right? Because, you know, if we do get to the point where, like, again, at that school that I was at today, there was there were two math teachers who were showing me now there's apparently a different way of doing division. I mean, long division, on writing it out on a piece of paper. And it was kind of interesting, you know, you're supposed to guess at how many numbers, you know, how many times the number can go into, whatever. But I said to them, how many kids are ever going to do this on a piece of paper? And they just looked up at me and they said, well, probably not many. They all have phones. And I said, you know, that's part of the privilege that we have. But still, that's more and more the reality. So it's never a question of whether or not we're going to teach division. It's a question of, well, we'll let them find their own path to division. So this is what kind of drives me nuts, is that we're not having those foundational questions at any real depth or with any real relevance. And instead, we're just saying, well, we're going to personalize so that kids can get to our outcomes either through an adaptive learning software like Newton, woohoo, or we're just going to say, well, you have a little more choice and voice in the ways that you get to our outcomes. But
along the way, the thing that I know that I find so frustrating, and I know you do too, is that, you know, at the same time all this is being talked about and people are spending so much money on the software, on, you know, investing in the schools and everything, you've got extraordinary thinkers like Conrad Wolfram, who's over there in England and running his computer-based mathematics group, rethinking the way that kids should be learning mathematics in a technology-rich, ever-changing world, completely reimagining the possibilities. And so rather than sitting down and saying, let's get the long division pencil and paper out and let's teach kiddies how they do this, let's continue to have kids do the mechanical stuff that computers do better, compute, and let's not, for instance, you know, allow kids to have the time to spend on the higher order ideas, but let's waste their time on doing the mechanical stuff. You know, we've got to get ourselves, we've got to make that leap forward, and you always say it's about a high bar of change. A low bar of change is let's do on a computer what we did before, the substitution, call it whatever you like. And yet I think Conrad's been, he did his TED talk I think nearly 3 years ago. I know Estonia, I know parts of Nordic countries and other countries around the world are now looking at what he's doing. But it's a good example of saying to people, hey look, we're not saying, you know, computers don't have a role in helping kids have a deeper understanding of mathematics. Of course they do. There are extraordinary ways that they can do that. One of them is not to sit them on a computer and give them the choice about which path they will, you know, take to get to the same endpoint. And that's the tragedy. I think it's a tragedy. There have been billions of tens of billions of dollars wasted on this stuff, and yet today we've got whole schools and whole school districts being built on a fiction.
And you know, it's the same thing that kind of gets me about competency-based learning, right? You know, everybody, that's the new one now. We have states in America that are adopting competency-based learning. There still are competencies, and I'm not saying that our competencies, that, you know, there aren't certain things that we want all kids to be able to do. Absolutely. But it's not, if in this world we need to develop and nurture kids who are powerful, agile, able learners in the world, we're not going to necessarily get them there by solely focusing on our competencies. We're going to have to let them develop their own and you know, pursue their own. And I think that's why the adjectives in front of the noun just drives me nuts. It's just learning. If we just stuck with the one word, if we just focused on that learning word and really made that the focus of our work, what is it? I think we'd be much better off, and I think our kids would be much better off. Right now, you know, and it, you know, FETC is going on now. You know, the I guess they've renamed that now to the Future of Education Technology Conference or something. I don't know, but I guarantee you, if you're down in Orlando right now and you're on the vendor floor, you're seeing a whole bunch of people making a whole bunch of money on personalized learning, and it's like that's just not right because we shouldn't be paying for that. We should be, that's a mindset choice. It's a way of looking at the world. It's an ethos. It's a culture. It's not a program. It's not a piece of software. And I think that's what frustrates me so much about this. And again, I just want to say this once again, this caveat that isn't, you know, this isn't about teachers or educators trying to do, you know, the wrong thing for kids, but it's just, as Russell Acuff says, you know, we're not doing the right thing. We're trying to do things right. And the right thing is to stop with all this personalized, competency-based, project-based, problem-based, blah-blah-based, whatever, learning, and just let's talk about what learning is and figure out how that happens and then just make that happen in classrooms. It's just common sense.
So I'll ask you then, Will, reading this story in Wired, about the summit schools. I mean, think of it. At what point did they ask the question, how do you believe kids learn most deeply and powerfully? And on the basis of the answer to that question, how did they manage to get to where they are?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you read it, you'd think that they're not having any conversations about what kids need to learn.
Mm-mm.
None.
Not at all.
And no. I guess they believe that technology can engage kids to learn stuff that maybe they don't really want to learn, but they have to learn. And that for some strange reason that this method is going to help them remember it 6 months or a year after they've taken the test. I just don't think this is any different. I don't think any of these kids who are learning any of this stuff are going to retain any of it that they don't care about in any better measure than kids, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, it's about, you know, it's about interest and passion. I love that Seymour Saracen line that says, you know, there's a difference between wanting to learn something and having to learn something. And it doesn't matter what kind of plate you put it on. If you have to learn it, it's going to go down, you know, it's going to go down tough. And you're probably not going to like it as much as the stuff that you really want to learn. And if our goal is to develop kids as learners, why wouldn't we do it in the context of stuff that they want to learn about? So, I mean, that's the bigger, again, question that I'm not sure that they asked that, and I'm not sure how they would define or how they would articulate their beliefs about how kids learn, to be honest with you.
And I think also there's, you know, to me, the red flag goes up the minute I read this sort of statement. My son comes home so excited when he passes a focus area, Swift said in an email. I've never seen him react to school so well. I mean, truly, that is that's embarrassing.
But that's the narrative, right? That's the thing that it's just, we're so invested in that. You know, we're invested in the number. We're invested in doing school. Kids are having fun at doing school. And again, you know, there's something to be said for that on some level. I'm really glad that child is happy and that I'm really glad that child is excited about feeling competent or whatever else. But we're the adults that have to make better decisions about what that kid should be feeling happy about. You know what I mean? I think, again, that's a really low bar for to set for helping kids to feel good about themselves in school.
Don't you think that a lot of it too has come, and I know you talk about and have written about this as well, that we have a fixation on content, that school, that whether we like it or not, and whether we've been overt about saying it, that really what we've often, we align school with content delivery. And so that's where this notion of personalization that's exemplified in this article comes from, that, you know, all the way along, we've got a fixed amount of content. If we can just pour it into kids' heads over the 13 years they're with us, they'll come out the other end and life will be very happy for them. And no one gives any thought to, you know, the how relevant that might be in a modern world, indeed, even in the past, and what that actually means to the child in terms of their learning and how effective it can be. When you talked about FET's exhibition floor, you know, I used to often say that the reason that, that so many vendors sell content is they could never sell pedagogy. You know, the art of science, the art and science of teaching and learning is a complex area, and to understand our young people as learners and to be able to address their needs specifically isn't something you can put in a box and sell for $99 a month. And so I can fully understand that vendors want to put together packages that, you know, claim to be able to deliver content more effectively through mediums such as personalized environments. But I also understand why they collapse. The best example we can think of, surely, has been Bill Gates's, you know, Gates's Foundation with In Bloom. I mean, you know, I think it is mind-boggling to think that they invested over $100 million, you know, in a product there, which was essentially going to address a lot of these areas. And it was going to pull in yet another spooky area called big data that was going to allow teachers and administrators to analyze a student's performance and personalize their learning. And that $100 million experience lasted less than 2 years.
Right.
So it's not only a failure from a point of view of learning, it's a commercial failure. It's not something that has legs in either sphere. And yet we continue to throw this notion at people that it is the answer for kids in schools.
Well, I'm sure that there are many other, and I know there are many other kinds of rhetorical hoops that we prefer to jump through rather than get to the kind of the meat of the conversation and the real purpose for why we exist, which is about learning, you know. And I think part of that has to do with this move that we're going to have to make away from these kind of teacher-centric spaces in schools to more learner-centric spaces. And I guess you could say, you know, you could look at what Summit is doing, you could look at what some of these other people are doing and say that it is somewhat of a step in that direction. But I guess you and I, you know, both get just a little frustrated with how small of a step that feels like, because it's not really built on a foundational vision or belief that articulates, you know, how kids learn and how kids learn best and most powerfully and all that kind of stuff.
I think also, Will, I think just to make a final point there, I think above all it trivializes the role of the teacher as a professional. I'm sorry. I ultimately it says we can trivialize the difficulty in helping a child learn these complex ideas by putting them through a series of questions that allow them to make choices to get them to the same endpoint, and the teacher barely needs to be involved. And you know, I mean, the old saying of, you know, Gary Stager used to say, any teacher who thinks they could be replaced by a computer probably should be. Well, we just continue to come back to that. For decades, we come back to the same point. This, the, you know, the teaching profession should be alert to these sorts of things, and hopefully this discussion will help those people who have taken the time to listen to this podcast to share the experience with others in their faculty, across their staff rooms, to have more critical conversations about topics like this, so that their faculty, that their parents are better informed about the need to think more deeply about what the learning environment should be for their kids. And it shouldn't just be about picking up the latest and greatest personalization application.
Well, I think that's a good place to end it for today, Bruce. Thanks for engaging in a equally frustrating and yet interesting conversation about the state of the world and technology, which I'm sure is the first of what hopefully will be many of these. So appreciate it, mate. And enjoy the heat.
yeah, and the start of our school year. So
our
school year starts down in Australia and New Zealand next week, and so we have we go to the calendar year. But I know you've been back for a number of weeks. So I'm looking forward to having these discussions.
What is it, about 40 down there? 40 degrees?
Yeah, it's going to be 40 tomorrow. Yeah. Woof. 40 degrees Celsius.
Yes, and for those of us in Fahrenheit world, that's like 180 or something, right? Something like that.
Easy there.
All right, mate. Cheers.
Cheers, mate. Thanks again.